As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. We have a big show today with a great guest. It is Kalen DeBoer, the new coach in Alabama, the head coach who had led Washington to the national title game just a few months ago. A lot to get into with Kalen. He was very gracious with his time with us. We'll also get to some mailbag questions. Some big news out of the SEC this morning as we're taping this. Stu, a lot of stuff going on in the middle of the offseason.
There's no offseason, Bruce. Everybody says, oh, what do you do in the offseason? There is no offseason. There's always something in the news. But yeah, big get here. So let's get to our guest.
All right, Stu, we are pleased to be joined by our big guest today, the new head coach at Alabama, Kalen DeBoer, who is joining us from Seattle, where he is there on spring break. So have you had a chance to catch your breath a little bit this week?
This is kind of the first time. I appreciate you guys having me on, but it's a chance to see the family, and got a couple days in there right after signing day, but we were still busy hiring staff and going through a lot of that, getting ready for the kind of the next phase, which was finishing winter workouts and spring ball. And so this has been a couple good days just to kind of be with the family, because we went straight from the season to, taking over at Alabama. So it's been, it's kind of been nonstop for us.
I wanted to ask you, somebody I know who's been down there as a high school coach and was very impressed by the culture there, and said, you know, one of the reactions was that almost any other program that would have been under so much change probably would have turned on its head, but this one really didn't, from their observation. Did that at all surprise you how the players you inherited have been able to kind of pivot and respond to everything you guys have thrown at them?
Well, I think when you have a program like Alabama, there's a belief, that the guys have that, the program's going to hire the right people. The resources are still all going to be there in place. And those are the things that, that are, you know, what they need to continue to grow and develop. And then, you know, just great talent around. And as long as they stuck together and just kind of were patient and, kind of stayed the course, everything would work out. And so, there's been so much just that these guys have embraced from our new staff coming in, that I can't explain how appreciative I am of their mindset and the way they've just kind of stayed together and giving us a chance. And, here we are now, the middle of March, and have a couple of spring practices under our belt. And it was great for these guys to go get away for a week and have some spring break and just refresh their minds and their bodies. And so we'll get back to it, but we're in a really good spot, and I'm proud of these guys.
So I'm curious, I know it's only been a week of spring ball, but obviously you got to see them in conditioning before that too. For years and years under Coach Saban, Alabama was known as the team that, kind of scared you as soon as they got off the bus, right? These are the best of the best recruits. These guys are bigger, faster, stronger. What is your impression so far of the talent that you walked into there?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, we got a good looking team right now, and doesn't mean that we're complete. We're always working on the guys that we have within to develop and grow. And we have some really good young players I'm excited about for the years to come. But we also do have those guys that have been in the program and, you know, have taken a lot of snaps for us, you know, wearing the crimson, and, you know, they're in a good spot right now. And so physically, yeah, there's a presence about these guys that's fun to be around, and you can see this, why the success has happened. And I'm looking forward to building on that.
Kalen, taking this a little bit of a step back. So for especially for fans in major college football, the first time they probably ever really heard about you was when you were the offensive coordinator at Indiana. And then you guys got it going there with Tom Allen, obviously, and Michael Penix. And then the last 2 years, you guys have really taken the college football world by storm, and it was a big play offense. And obviously, Michael and the receivers especially had a spectacular couple of years. I'd ask you this, for people who, you know, maybe aren't so familiar in the SEC, how different was what you guys did at Indiana compared to what you guys just did at Washington? I know you had bigger receivers with the Huskies, but like in terms of scheme stuff, in terms of what you did there, obviously you ran it at IU, and then you had your longtime colleague Ryan Grubb with you the last couple of years, and now Nick Sheridan's your offensive coordinator and Ryan's not there. So what's the evolution of what you guys did and now you think you'll be able to do there?
Yeah, you bet. The foundation, I think, is, I know it's the same thing. It's the same system. You know, 90% of the play calls, you know, well, probably maybe 80% of the play calls that we ran at Indiana, if those guys lined up and came be a part of our offense today at Alabama, they'd probably be able to line up in those formations and those motions and the shifts and things like that. I think is what really you saw at Washington is a staff and a couple players, right? With Michael Penix already being in the system for 3 years, the year I was there, two more afterwards with Nick Sheridan as the coordinator, you know, hit the ground running. And Nick Sheridan knew the offense. So you had Ryan Grubb, myself, Lee Marks, who came from, you know, Fresno State. There was guys that just, you know, were able to, again, hit the ground running and keep the offense moving because of the talent, because of the familiarity with everyone. You know, we didn't really have to grow it at a pace that probably had to do when I was at Indiana, where I was the only new coach coming in and trying to teach the coaches, have the coaches teach the players. I think the timeline also, I was hired in December, you know, at Washington, December 1st or November 30th. And, you know, at Indiana, coming in really the last couple days of January, you know, there's just less time. And so it was a quick learning curve for the guys at Indiana. I think there was a good amount of time where we could really take guys like Michael Penix, who already knew the offense, and have him help teach during the winter workouts. And that spring ball, you could see, even though there was a competition at quarterback, you could see that the guys were executing a high level. And obviously players make plays too. Like you said, the receivers and the personnel we had there at Washington over the last 2 years was outstanding. And those guys were the ones that essentially got it done.
People obviously watched you guys at Washington national championship game and saw a lot of Michael Penix and what he did. But how would you describe the, you know, as you guys are, you're talking about what you did at Indiana, Washington, that it's, and now Alabama is fairly similar, like that it's got to be more than just Michael Penix throws deep, right? Like, what do you describe? How would you describe your offense to somebody?
Yeah, I would say we're a pro spread, a lot of kind of pro feel to it, tight end, you know, that's involved and moving around. We're really not a lot of 10 personnel, four wide receivers. We can do that at times depending on situational, you know, the situation, but you know, I think having the ability to both run and pass is key to us. We use a lot of the movement to really challenge eye discipline with the defense. I think every snap, we really try to put something on the defense's shoulders and make that coordinator worried about, you know, the ball could be going down the field and that every guy is a potential to score on any play. That doesn't mean it always has to be through the air. It means that, you know, the threat of down the field, you know, throws and things like that open up a great run game where our physicality can shine. And, you know, you saw that all really come together, especially this last year, the last part of the season at Washington. So it should be simple to us and complex to our opponent just because the window dressing that we use, you know, changes from week to week. And by week 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, there's a lot of film that, you know, the opponent's going through and really them trying to figure out where to start with, you know, trying to teach their guys, you know, the tendencies and things like that. I could see it being really tough.
I want to ask you, Kalen, just to take a step back, maybe big picture wise. So our mutual friend, Chris Peterson, and I had a long conversation not that long ago before the national title game. You know, he's a big fan of yours. And one of the things that we talked about, and this was not knowing that, you know, an Alabama move was going to happen, but he had talked about his own perspective on the coach he was at Boise State. And then the guy he kind of became, I don't know if evolved is the right word, but like became at Washington. And he thought you had a great gift. And he said, and I'm going to quote it, he's not thinking about the next thing, or if he is, he's still present. I think that is such a gift right now that I hope he doesn't lose, to be present where his feet always are. And then he said, it's not when you're at a bigger place, it's like to just not be Kalen DeBoer, the coach, 24/7, 365 into every room that he goes into. That is exhausting. You talk about your identity of coaching is not who I am. It's what I do, but it's everywhere you go. It's that's the coach. And I so knowing that, and because I think what he said was kind of illuminating, especially from his perspective, having lived it. How challenging is it to stay the same guy or the same person or the same coach that you were in Sioux Falls when you were winning national titles or at Fresno or even as an assistant with Chris Creighton back in the MAC to now you are the guy, fair or unfair, right or wrong, you are the guy who is replacing the greatest coach in the history of college football and you're on a huge, huge stage?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot of thoughts that go through my mind as you're talking there. I think a lot of it is you just have to enjoy, you know, what you're doing and the people you're with. And, you know, then that leads to the perspective. And I guess what I would say is when every day you enjoy going to work and, you know, the people you're with, you trust and believe in them. It allows you to not have to put, you know, not have to put on this face or so forth. You know, you're still the leader of the crew and you're providing the guidance and organization and, you know, helping the program really uphold, you know, the standard that you have set and all of that. But, when you have people like a Chris Peterson, you know, that you can really count on, you know, to give you that perspective. And, you know, he was really a great example of someone who over the last 2 years, you know, you could either pick up the phone or, you know, I'd see him from time to time on campus and, you know, just really kind of reel you back in. Not that you were going a certain direction or whatever, just, you know, just really get that mindset, you know, dialed in. And that goes on and on with the staff that you're around and the other head coaches and within the program at the university. You know, having that network of people that you can just really count on both inside the walls and outside, you know, your day to day kind of routine. So and then I think there's also just a piece where just knowing that the way you do things, you know, it's been effective. It's got the job done. And to trust that you don't need to go, you know, necessarily prove something. You're just out to really make the place you're at the best it can be and enjoy the moments that come along with it and the journey and the growth and development of whether it be staff or players, just everyone that surrounds you, just helping them become the best they can be. And when you keep the main thing, I think it really, you know, just, you know, that's all you can ask. And, you know, Coach Pete gave me something. I kind of had something along lines of it, but, you know, he just said the number one ask, you know, of your team is to bring your best attitude each and every day, you know, and we always tied it into energy and effort as well. So, you know, that's all I ask of our players. That's all I ask of my staff. And I really, that's all they can ask of me, you know, is to bring your best energy, attitude, and effort every single day. And when we do that and we have the right people in the building, whether it be staff or the team, you know, good things are going to happen because we enjoy the work we're doing. And each and every day we're stacking moments and stacking you know, the progress we're making towards our goals.
How different, if at all, do you think you are as a coach or even as a person from the Sioux Fall days to what you are at Washington now?
And now? I don't think as a person and just what's important to me or, you know, how I am day to day is really any different. And how I, you know, just talk with people. I hope it's not. I think that, you know, just what you do during the day is the difference. And the schedule is, you know, set for you in a lot of ways because there's this call, this meeting, and, you know, you're just going from spot to spot as you keep the whole organization, you know, moving and everyone on the same page. And, you know, there's just more people involved. And so I think that's the biggest change, but I would hope most people would say as a person, I'm really no different than I was 15 years ago when I was at Sioux Falls.
Yeah. A lot of coaches that, you know, obviously move up the ranks say at the end of the day, you know, football is football, but the responsibilities of a head coach at any Power Five program, but certainly a program like Alabama, are just so different. You know, the more you kind of move up the ranks at Alabama in particular, you know, it's well known that not that Washington didn't have a rabid fan base, they do, but it's just so important to the people in that state. I know you've probably been inside the building or on the practice field most of your time so far, but have you had some real life examples of seeing that, you know, that Alabama Crimson Tide culture there?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the day we landed on the plane with my family to accept the job, and, you know, it felt like there were tens of thousands. I don't think that's the case, but there were a lot of people there, you know, to greet us as we got off the plane. And, you know, just the excitement towards the program. And I know as much as that was emotional for the fan base because of Coach Saban and all of a sudden, you know, the retirement that was happening, you know, for them to just believe that much in Alabama football and be that excited for the future, even, you know, having not even met me, that was really a cool moment. I think that, you know, the activities when you go support other teams and programs and just, you know, the different moments I've been around the fan base, even those small occasions, you know, that's been really cool to feel that and, you know, just enjoying the moment, you know, you know, looking at it in a way where, you know, you want to embrace it. You know, that's kind of the way I've kind of looked at it always and want to try to do that the best I can. You know, even when it does get a little hectic and things like that, just enjoy and be appreciative of the moment that you're in.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like when you took over at Washington, they were 4-8 and they were reeling. Obviously, this is a program that that just played in the playoff and has won a lot of national titles. Like, how did you decide? What was your process like about, okay, I'm going to probably keep this. And then this is something that's really, this is something that is a big part of our identity that we're going to implement here. Like, how did you go about that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the foundation, just the things that are non-negotiables, our core values, those are, you know, really things that represent the things I felt have been important since even going back to when I was even a player in college. And I saw on my head coach that I played for take a team and program that was 2-8 my freshman year to being 14-0 my senior year at national champions. And the dynamic that existed within, yes, there was different travel, right? I mean, there was all these things that are different between NAIA football and Division I football, but the foundation of how it came together had some key things, you know, and it was having an environment and a family type atmosphere, togetherness, chemistry, great chemistry, that was fostered by a coaching staff, but really came to life because of the way the players, you know, bought into the vision. And then I think, you know, just having a way of having everything be there in accountability, you know, staff, you know, at this level, they got to have the staff accountability to each other. But really the staff and the players having that accountability, us kind of giving them the roadmap and showing, you know, what we feel it should look like. But those guys, you know, as a team, just really believing like, yeah, this is what needs to happen for us to continue to win. And then, you know, I think just the toughness. So family accountable and toughness, and mentally and physical toughness, both, I think, have been critical to my success and our team's success wherever I've been. And I don't think that would be anything anyone would argue as far as why, you know, Alabama's been successful, you know, over many decades, is the toughness it exudes, both on the field and just in how they prepare and off the field.
Well, I'll bring you back to on the field for a second here. And again, I know it's only been a week of spring ball, but the guy that everybody obviously remembers from last year's team is Jalen Milroe. And you know well the story of how much he progressed from rowing the season till the end. You talked earlier about what you guys like to do on offense. What have you seen so far from him and how you think he can fit into what you like to do offensively?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, you got to look at Jalen as a person, and man, he's got a huge heart. And, you know, I think there were some moments during the season last year where he really both led by example and did some things where he kind of put himself out there to pull the team together and, you know, just talks and just, you know, all the moments that kind of a part of a season, he was front and center with that. And now he's had an off season and he's continued to just keep working. The guy's in the building super early, you know, at least 4 a.m., you know, doing things, whether it's rehab, you know, just different type of work, physically, mentally. He's just all in. And, you know, you talk about being in the present and taking advantage of the moment. He's doing exactly that. And I think, he's not doing it to say, look at me or anything like that. But our team recognizes, you know, how important this is to him and, you know, how important the team is to him as well. And so, you know, you first start there. And then I think what you see is a guy who is hungry, is looking for just more things to be coached up on. He's been great. You know, just listening, trying the things that, you know, are little tweaks here and there that we think he can improve on, open to now. I think this would probably be at least his third, you know, offense, or different version of a coordinator, you know, and kind of what we're doing. He's open to kind of relearning and, you know, he was as quick as anyone with understanding some of the base concepts when we were installing them. And that wasn't just coming through the moments in the meeting room, that was coming because he was putting the preparation of work in when he walked out of the facility as well. So, you know, physically, I mean, he's got tools both with his arm and his legs. That showed up already in the first three practices, whether it's making, you know, throws down the field or throwing, you know, with some zip from, you know, hash to one hash to the opposite sideline. you know, and then just mobility, whether it's keeping plays alive or really like hitting home runs, you know, where he escapes, or maybe even a designed, you know, quarterback run. You know, he's just got a lot of tools that are going to be fun to be a part of. And now it's just, you know, keeping him healthy, keeping him upright, continuing to grow in the offense, you know, him building that trust in the people that are around him, whether it's the offensive line or the receivers. He's doing a great job here through three practices for sure.
Have there been days where he's actually been there at, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning or three something? Cause that's, you heard a little rumblings about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty consistent. I mean, there might've been a couple of days early on when I first got there where I might've even just missed him when I was leaving and he was coming in. So,
You're still on Seattle time and he's on Milrow time.
I don't know. There was a little bit of that going on the first couple of weeks, especially. So, you know, I do know that, you know, the strength staff, you can't beat him in. And, you know, we do have strength staff that are get there around that time and they're with him as well. But, man, the guys, taking advantage of every minute in the day. And, you know, you love guys that want it that bad to where they'll make those sacrifices and that commitments at that level.
All right. So now I'm going to take you from spring practice to, you know, it's impossible to talk to a coach these days without talking about all the changes that are happening in your sport and in college athletics. But Bruce and I didn't know when we agreed to, or when we, you know, invited you on, that your predecessor was actually on Capitol Hill yesterday and got a lot of attention for some comments he made about, you know, how much the sport has changed. He said, you know, basically, and I'm going to make sure I pull up the exact quote here, how much it's changed. He said, all the things I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. It's always been about developing players, about helping people become more successful in life. And then he lamented that a lot of the conversations now with recruits are primarily them asking about how much are they going to get paid? How are you navigating the balance now that all other coaches have to deal with, where, you know, you want guys, especially a program like Alabama, to be focused on the bigger picture and developing for life. But this is a big part of it now, is NIL and collectives and the transfer portal.
Yeah, I think the, you know, the times have changed, you know, and you have to adjust and adapt. And, you know, I think I've been able to do a good job with that. And I think our staff will have, you know, the type of personalities and type of, want to just continue to keep the main thing the main thing. And that's coach these guys up, understanding also that NIL is a part of it. The portal is a part of it. And so one day at a time, I think we just got to just keep working, keep doing what we do, and, you know, kind of, you know, find the hearts and minds of these guys. And, you know, obviously we're at a place like with Alabama football that has a lot of other things going for it too, when it comes to the resources and the things that these guys have access to, you know, see their development to where they're preparing for life beyond college football. And it's, you know, the NFL or even beyond, you know, playing just football together. So I think, you know, try to get to your question. I think it's one of those things where we all got into coaching for reasons, different reasons, right? And we love the game and we love impacting, you know, the lives of these guys that we get a chance to coach. And it's fun seeing them 10, 15, 20 years from now and where they've gone to and the families that they've raised. But if you just try to really hone in on that in the moment we're in, I think that's the key, you know, and it not get overwhelmed by the things you can't control. But at the same time, also trying to help grow the game and make the game better. And I love that Coach Saban, and I don't ever want to put words in his mouth, but I love that Coach Saban is trying to have this impact, and trying to have this voice that, he certainly has. You know, he's got so much respect, as you said earlier, I mean, he's the greatest to ever do it, you know, and that voice that he has, means something when he's sitting in front of people. And, you know, he's getting out of place. And I think where, you know, when he talks, it's not people that are just looking at him. You know, it's an agenda he has to help his own situation out. And I think that's really good. And that's, you know, something I'm I'm excited to see, the ways and things that can happen over the next year or two with people like Coach Saban, help lead in the charge. I think the key is right to have a sustainable model, that allows the student athletes to get NIL or some version of that or whatever it may be. And definitely am in favor of that. I think there is an opportunity that they should be able to take advantage of, but also a model, like I said, that's sustainable. Things that we can do within the athletic program department to where, it isn't, Alabama, I think we'll find ways to continue to move forward, but there's a lot of programs that don't have the same backing, the same resources. And, just for the game itself, I'd love to see us continue to work together to try to figure out what's best moving forward in the years to come.
Kalen, I'll just wrap up on this, and it's a big open-ended question, but go wherever direction obviously you think fits. But how will you define success there in Tuscaloosa? I mean, I know that you guys didn't end up winning the national title there last year at UW, but came real close and blew a lot of people's minds just what you were able to do in a short amount of time. And now you go to this program with the expectations are sky high because of what it's been like. But for you, as a guy who's had success everywhere you've been, how would you define success there?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the expectations and that you alluded to. And, that's what is attractive about coming to Alabama, right? Is coming where there are expectations. The alternative isn't so much fun. It's fun seeing a program grow and overcome obstacles or whatever it might be at different places I've been able to coach at over the years. But this is, the best of the best right here, and this program continuing on the tradition is what I'm really looking forward to doing. And I think that the sky's the limit. It's always been that here, and the sky's the limit for us to continue to grow and adapt and evolve. And, we'll do it. There's some things just because of how I've coached and how I've seen things that are going to be different than Coach Saban. But I think the foundation, and the core principles are still going to be the same, the success piece. Yes. I mean, the expectations are there. And I know God asked the same question. I think the last two spots I was at, both Washington and Fresno State, and especially at Washington, the expectation here to win championships, national championships, conference championships. Shoot, I'm not going to waver from that. I understand that's really, really important to our fan base. And we're going to be doing everything we can to be able to be in that spot at the end of the year in December, and now obviously early to mid January now, or even late January, be playing for a national championship. And so we'll put those goals out there. That is certainly a goal for us inside the building, but really when it comes down to day to day, what we will be talking about within the program is what that process looks like and what must be done today to help us reach those goals, and how tomorrow we need to be better than we were today, and so forth. And if we do that, we'll reach our goals. We'll have the success that we, are all wanting, expecting, whether it's internal, inside the building, coaches, staff, or, our fan base.
All right, Kalen, we appreciate your time joining us today on the Audible, being very gracious with that, and excited to see you down in Tuscaloosa.
You bet. Thank you guys for having me on, and looking forward to having you down. You guys know you're welcome anytime.
All right, guys. Bruce, let's just fill the listeners in a little bit. Once we stop rolling, Kalen and I bonded a little bit about our softball connection. His daughter is a senior in high school who's going to be playing for the Washington Huskies, signed to play with Washington. And, of course, I am a coach of an 8-year-old softball team. We had our first game last night, 6-0 win. So it was cool to talk about that stuff with him a little bit. He obviously asked you about Ben's football team as well. All right, a couple items in the news. On Wednesday morning, it came out that Trev Alberts, Nebraska's AD, former Husker linebacker great, is going to Texas A&M. And that obviously surprised some folks. Like, I guess you would kind of expect that when your own former All-American linebacker is your AD, he's not going to try to...
He's a legend there. This is not just a former player. I mean, And he'd been an AD in the state before, took over the program when it's been really reeling. I think he did a really good job of getting Matt Rhule. I know you and I both, I think, agree that that's a hell of a get for the Huskers. And there's been other parts of the athletic program that have shined pretty well.
Basketball team's the number three seed in the Big Ten tournament. That never happens.
Basketball. I mean, you have to go back to like the Dave Hoppen days when they were relevant.
Danny Nee. Yeah. I mean, I think he was a much needed figure at the time because people were so Husker fans were, Bill Moose was supposed to be the hero. He brought in Scott Frost. That did not go well. I think it came out at the end that Bill Moose was like spending half his time on vacation, basically. So here comes Trev Alberts. He did a lot of big things to modernize it. Oh, the volleyball match at the stadium. Remember, that was a huge deal. And nope, yet again, the SEC school swoops in. And obviously, this SEC school in particular seems to really like to make these big splashes.
Yeah. And look, I mean, he did, our colleague Mitch Sherman pointed out, you know, they just announced a $450 million project for the South End Zone for the stadium that's 100 years old. And there's a lot of stuff that, he got done there. But again, SEC money, and obviously A&M throws around a lot of it. It's an interesting time there, you know, with them pivoting on football once again. I got to be honest, when we heard this morning, and credit to Brent Zorneman from the Houston Chronicle who had the first report of it, it kind of gave me whoa, that's a big get for them. So not the first time A&M has swung for the fences and made contact. So interesting times to see where Nebraska goes from here. But I will say this, I do think Trevor Alberts left his alma mater in a lot better shape than he took it over recently.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We'll see. Obviously, you know, Matt Rhule didn't have necessarily a great first season. Expectations will be higher in year two. And then I don't normally pay much attention to position coaches moving from one school to the other, but this one caught my eye. Tony Alford, who's been Ohio State's running backs coach since 2015, early in Urban Meyer's tenure, is leaving for arch rival Michigan. And two things stood out about that to me. One, obviously, an Ohio State coach going to Michigan seems kind of like a big deal. And also, I mean, you know, there's any number of reasons guys make moves for their career. But, you know, he was set to coach probably the most exciting running back tandem in the country with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, the Ole Miss transfer.
Yeah, and he leaves behind a stacked offense. This was such, you know, there were some rumblings of Tony Alford potentially being on the move for a while. At one point, there was talk of him, you know, speculation that he might end up at a different big school that he had some ties to. And this was the opening, you know, with Mike Hart not coming back at Michigan. Now, he does inherit one extremely talented running back in Donovan Edwards, who's back. But, you know, I think it's a really good addition, you know, certainly for Michigan. You know, I think that you have a new staff and you have some really good pieces, but Tony Alford does a really, really good job with developing a running back room. I have gotten to know him over the last few years, very impressed with him, and how he talks to, you know, how he connects with players. And, you know, I think that's a good get for Michigan.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Stu, let's get into the mailbag.
Get into the mailbag. And as always, you can send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We have a question from Jonathan Silverman, who makes sure to put in parentheses, not the actor. Dear Stu and Bruce, with March Madness upon us, it got me thinking about your coach rankings and especially characterizing the group who had won national championships and whether there will start to be a group of coaches who made it to the playoffs that also have particular status. In college basketball, making the Final Four is a strong marker for a successful program. Even making it to the Elite Eight or Sweet 16 regularly is a marker of success. And in baseball and softball, making the College World Series, which has eight teams, is also a marker of success. So with the expanding playoff, do you think college football is going to become more like college basketball or less like college basketball with this amount of new teams involved?
I think Jonathan makes an interesting point. Certainly for the, if you make the Final Four, it's a big deal now. Obviously, that's three rounds of a, you know, 3 weekends of a tournament to go from 64 or whatever the number is they're technically at now to get to the Final Four. And I think it's less of a big deal if you're Kentucky going to the Sweet 16 or if you're North Carolina or Duke or Michigan State making the Sweet 16 as it is if you're like, I do remember this, like 1 year when Quinn Snyder was the coach at Mizzou, he got them on an elite eight run. And that was a big deal at the time. I don't think it'll be quite that unless you're talking about, let's say Jamie Chadwell is still at Liberty and he gets them to, you know, gets them to the Final Four. Yeah, then I think that would be a big deal for there. If you get to the Final Four at a big conference, if you're a Big Ten or SEC program, I don't think that's going to be as carry as much weight. Now, look, if let's say it happens with Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, I mean, this is a team that we think is talented enough to be a national title contender. If they can go to the make it to the Final Four, that would be heady stuff for folks in Oxford. I think if you're the head coach at Ohio State and you're Ryan Day, or if you're Dan Lanning at Oregon, or certainly, you know, our guest Kalen DeBoer, I think that is, you know, probably less heady company. I think it just depends on where you're at.
Yeah, I think if you want to, like I do now, remember, some teams are going to have to win two games to make it in the Final Four and some are going to only have to win one. I think if you win two playoff games, I don't care who you are, Georgia, whoever, like that should be considered successful. But even now, I mean, we have a Final Four, and if you would think making it through your season and into the four in the 14 playoff was a accomplishment onto a success and to itself. But even then I've seen cases where, like, you know, the year Ohio State made the playoff, but got shut out by Clemson in the semifinal. Like, that's not, Ohio State fans aren't waxing nostalgically, right, about that season. So there are some schools where it's going to be, we got to make the national championship game. And then there's going to be other schools that think it's really cool to just to win a playoff game. And then there'll be somewhere it's really cool just to make the playoff. And so that's one of the things I like about an expanded playoff. There's not just four teams that at the end of the season can say, hey, we did it. There might be 14 pretty soon. So I do think I think we won't really know until we get into it. Like, how does that change how we define coaches? We've talked about the negative of it. Like, I think coaches at major programs who even go like 2 years in a row without making the playoff might get fired. But in terms of saying, hey, this guy, you know, we both had Lance Leipold in our top three. Now, does he have to lead Kansas into the 12-team playoff for us to think as highly of him? Time will tell.
All right, Stu, next question is from Chris in Seattle. Hey, Bruce and Stu, on last week's podcast, you briefly talked about Luke Fickle, Wisconsin, and how if the Badgers went 7-6 again, there could be concerns about the Badgers program. In looking at the Badgers 2024 schedule, I'm wondering if that's really the case. It includes home versus Alabama at USC, home versus Penn State at Iowa, and home versus Oregon. If Wisconsin loses all those games, respectable losses, and won every other game, they'd finish the season 7-5. But I don't think any Badger fan would be too down on the future of the program just yet. Granted, Luke Fickle was brought in specifically to win those type of games, but with the level of change he brought into the program, doesn't it take 3 or 4 years to get up and running? I think Chris makes a good point, Stu. You agree?
I think he makes a good point, but I also think if that exact scenario were to happen, yeah, I think Wisconsin fans would be disappointed. I mean, they are a program that has won Big Ten championships, has been in New Year's Six Bowls. You know, prior to last season or last couple, they don't have seasons like that. They would win 9-10 games every year. So are they, you know, expecting to beat Alabama? Probably not. But I think they'll expect to beat Iowa. I think beating Penn State at home is a perfectly reasonable expectation. So, you know, I think if you're a Wisconsin fan, you want to see an improvement to like 9-3. And if you don't, I'm not going to say you're going to fire the guy, but I think they would be disappointed. And then the last thing he said about, doesn't it take 3 to 4 years? Traditionally, that was kind of the timeline, right? Like you take over a new program, you get 3 to 4 years. I don't think it is that anymore because of the transfer portal. It doesn't, nobody's going to buy that. He needs 3 to 4 years to bring in his own recruits when you can go into the portal and get a bunch of guys right away. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting. This again fits into like, what are expectations in the new era? I think Wisconsin fans are probably entitled to feel like, you know, 3 years in that they should have gone to the playoff once.
No, given the success they've had, that, you know, like in a lot of double digit wins, I don't think that's, you know, that would be one of those programs I would say if you get to the Final Four, I think that would carry a lot more weight than a,
now, keep in mind, even in those really good years, even the, you know, Bielema, early Paul Christ, you know, they kind of would hit their ceiling when they had to go play those really good Ohio State teams or when Michigan was like, they would beat the teams they're supposed to beat and then, you know, did not beat Ohio State, for instance, very often. And so I guess the concern, if you're them in this new conference, is there's like 3 or 4 of those kind of programs now you might have to beat, as evidenced by the schedule he just showed. But I don't think anybody's going to say like, well, we'll just chalk those up and hope we win the rest of them. Hope we beat Iowa. This is a program that, let's say, going back to 10-3, 11-2, 11-3, and they had 8-6, 9-4, and then back to 11-3, 10-3, 11-3, 13-1. So yeah, double digit wins is the expectation there.
All right, Stu, from James in Houston. James is an A&M grad. He points out, Bruce and Stu, I've been listening to the pod since you first started it. And this is the first time I've written in a question. Well, thank you, James, on both fronts. I've been listening to all the playoff talk, and one thing I can't figure out is why are college sites only being used in the first round? Shouldn't the school presidents want as many games at college sites as possible? Why give big cities like Houston and Phoenix the revenue when college towns like Manhattan, Kansas, and Madison, Wisconsin could use it more? Would ESPN not prefer the presentation that an on-campus stadium gives rather than a half empty NFL dome? It's a very logical question to ask, Stu. What do you have to say to James?
Yeah, it's the first question a lot of us asked way back in 2021 when they rolled out this format. Why aren't you going to play the quarterfinals on campus too? And now there's a contractual reason, which is the contract. This is the last 2 years of the pre-existing contract. ESPN, you know, is already paying for the Cotton Bowl and the Peach Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl. So they kind of had to figure out a way to incorporate them into the playoff, at least for these 2 years. But now they're figuring out the format for the next one before we've even seen how this first one goes. I think as soon as people experience those first round games on campuses, they're going to want more of them. It's about the fans for sure. It's been surprising, though, especially like the Big Ten. I know SEC administrators are all over the idea of hosting an on-campus game. It's been surprising I would put it as ambivalence among a lot of people in the Big Ten, where they're more concerned about, well, it could be really cold, and are the stadiums going to be able to handle that many people in the middle of December? What if the pipes freeze, et cetera, et cetera? And in fact, to the point where there is an option for schools to host it at a neutral site. Like if Ohio State were to say, you know, we'd rather play it in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil or something, like there is a way to do that, but I just can't imagine they would do that to their fans, take away a opportunity to see their team at home. So my prediction is it will eventually shift, but because of this timing where they have to lock in the new format before we see this format, you know, it might not be until the contract after this one. Let's wrap with Brian Ronan. Do you ever see a situation where NIL is managed and run by the schools instead of by these independent groups, I guess, or collectives? Let's say NIL is eventually managed and run by schools. Would the funding still be 100% donations, or would TV or other school revenue sources fund it? This brings me back to the, there's been a million of these NIL hearings in Congress, and they all run together. The only thing I found a little bit notable about the one on Tuesday that was run by Ted Cruz, and Saban was there, Greg Byrne was there, a few other people, is that for the first time I'm seeing the people shift from NIL is bad, it's wild, wild west, blah, 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 to, well, we're okay with the players making a share of the revenue. Now our goal is to not let them be employees. I think what he's suggesting is almost definitely going to happen. The details have to be sorted out, but even the NCAA president, Charlie Baker, has proposed something like this. Like, everybody acknowledges this is silly. They intentionally set it up so the schools are not allowed to be involved in NIL deals. And now I think everybody realizes that that was a mistake. It allowed these third parties to have way too much control in recruiting. It should be able to come in-house. But I don't, who's to say? I just think it would come out of your athletic budget, right? I mean, people donate to athletic departments as it is, and then it's up to the athletic department how to spend that money. It's not like, well, we only spend the donations on this, and then we only spend the TV money on that. But it's complicated. I know you don't necessarily get as deep in the weeds as this as I do, but, people you talk to, like, how do they think this should be, this should play out?
I had an interesting long conversation with somebody, a former college coach who's now in the NFL. And he was like, they just need to be considered employees. That's go work off of that, because that's what they are. And once you establish it that way, he kind of walked through. It was interesting because this was a person who's not coaching in college in a few years, but is still fairly connected to it, and said it kind of looked at it as like it's a farce what college athletics really is, and how collectives, and it's the workaround about how, come on, coaches know exactly what's going on, and they need to know what's going on. You can't have these people who are like based off of, on, this kind of like sham version, like, oh, these people are making their own decisions on the budget of everything when they wouldn't have any intel to know, especially as it relates to high school recruits. But, once you go down that road, it's a game, it's literally a game changer in terms of everything that how college athletics operates. Now, does that mean they're only employees in football because it's a revenue sport, and they're not going to be employees in some other sports that don't make any money? There's a lot of stuff that really needs to get sorted out. And I felt like this conversation, I go back to a conversation I had with Myron Roll back right after he finished at Florida State. And this was a good dozen years ago, maybe even more than that now, about who gets compensated and who doesn't, how do you do it? And there's, like, I feel like there are different conversations that need to be had than some of the conversations that are have to keep the model what it is. I mean, at one point, this person said to me, because the combine's obviously in Indianapolis, he goes, it's a really pretty building they have. They should turn it into like this. It's almost like the NCAA needs to be gotten rid of. I was like, well, this is a football coach saying this and not somebody who's connected to non-revenue sports. And there's a bunch of them where probably the NCAA is a much more viable option than it is in college football with the way everything is trended.
I can tell you this in talking with a variety of people across the industry, like right now, everybody is running around. Everybody knows it's the end of the current model as we know it. We got to do something. And so everybody's running around like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. We got to change it. But like no two people agree on how to change it. And so the big threat right now to them is the athletes as employees. So you said the person you talked to was like, just make them employees, right? Like as if that's so simple. I think it's going to head that way one way or the other, because judges and courts and the NLRB is going to say they are employees. It's not going to be like something you can opt into. Greg Byrne, the Alabama AD, he was at that hearing, and he said, the excess revenue from football and basketball effectively offset the roughly $40 million annually the other 19 programs collectively run in losses each year. If it weren't for football, we would not have 21 sports at the University of Alabama. This is the constant scare tactic now. If they become employees and we have to give them salaries, we're going to have to cut all our other sports because they lose money. I don't doubt that there'll be some sports cut, but it's like the fear mongering they do never turns out to be as bad as they think, as they say it's going to be. I mean, some of the stuff people said leading up to July 1st, 2021 about what just allowing players to make NIL money was going to cause, has not turned out to be the debacle. It's unexpected. It's gone in directions you wouldn't have expected necessarily. But it has not been the debacle. And so if this day comes that they make employees, that would definitely render collectives moot. The schools would literally be paying these players. You know, it's going to be complicated, and I don't want to make it seem like there won't be a lot of
it's complicated now, Stu.
There's going to be a lot of consequences, and it may be that some of these non-revenue sports get cut, and we don't want to see that. But if they do, like Alabama is one of the last schools that gets to claim poverty. The amount of money they make from selling out that stadium, from TV revenue, and so on and so forth, like, you've got the money to pay for those sports if that's how you choose to pay it. But right now, they choose to use it to pay the coaches, you know, the head coach. Well, I don't think Kalen's making $10 million a year, but that's what Nick Saban was making, to build yet another new locker room, to do this, to do that. Like, the money is there. You just have to commit to spending it on your softball team. And, you know, Alabama softball, very popular. Fans would not want to see that go away. So all which is to say, wait, they'll figure it out. Like, it won't be easy. They'll figure it out. They just have to finally stop being in denial and acknowledge that this is where it's headed.
As always, send your question to the audiblepod@gmail.com, and we will see you next time.
Well, you won't see everybody next time.
Oh, that's right. I'm away for a little while. So, Stu, you will be having a guest host. I know a guy in Dallas who's big on recruiting.
Well, here's the thing, Bruce. It's perfect timing, because next week it's the first round of the NCAA tournament. You're going to be in Spain. Talk basketball. But
no,
guess
it's not
what? I have the podcast to myself next week.
It's not that I hate when you talk college basketball. The viewers tune out. The listeners tune out.
It will not be a podcast about college basketball, but it would be unrealistic to think that the week the bracket comes out, I'm not going to mention something about the NCAA tournament on this podcast. It's too March Madness is too important to too many people. I'll figure it out. If you have ideas, send your questions. If you have questions for the Audible, send them to the audiblepod@gmail.com. If you have ideas for a guest that I should have on next week,
I have ideas. It rhymes with sorry, Fosterman.
I thought he was on your blacklist.
He's on my blacklist.
All right, we'll see you guys next time.